Hey, let's go answer the bell, huh?
If we just know what we're doing, work at it, and concentrate and do it.
Let's go, fellas! Go!
And here we go. What's up? Welcome to another episode of the Patriots Podcast. I'm Sean. He's JJ.
Hello.
All right. So we're coming in to one of the rare losses the Patriots
coming in hot.
Right. Yeah. Hot takes? Is that what you got? I don't have any hot takes.
I don't have
some
any
cold ass takes. Yeah. Not nearly as hot as this game. I feel like that it completely goes under the radar. People are talking about this game. Oh, how do the Patriots match up with the Jaguars? A rematch of the AFC Championship. 100.
Right.
97, whatever.
Well, no, it was 107. It felt like 107, but
yeah,
you know, and everyone wants to say, well, these guys are professionals and this, that, and the other thing. I mean, it's like, do you know what it's like to play? You could tell. You could just see from the moment our defense stepped on that field that they were like, whew, all right, what's going on? Like, Jesus Christ, it's hot. And they were just getting the ball, and the Jaguars were, like, loving it.
Yeah, they were certainly better acclimated.
Very comfortable in that situation.
Yeah, I was watching the game, and you'd be like, why in the fuck is that dude on the field? And then you realize, oh, because we just need to keep cycling players, or else somebody's going to fall down.
Right. They're going to have heat, which we didn't see as much, but we saw a little bit. Guys like Pat Chung, who they stood up. I mean, so it was 31-20 we lost. We didn't even score until late in the second quarter. We got 3 points.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We did decent in the fourth quarter. We scored 10, but we obviously did a lot more at that point. We were outscored 14-0 in the first quarter, which, no matter, you know, on the road against the playoff team, AFC Championship team, is hard as hell to come back from.
It's exactly what we said they shouldn't do.
Right. And that's, they knew that going in. But, you know, looking back at the game and stuff, we didn't really open it up that much. I mean, I don't know if that was because we didn't have options to open it up, or they didn't really were like Gronk, for say. Like, they didn't target Gronk on the seam once, where the guy caught 100 yards in the seam last week.
Yeah, but you don't. This team is built to cover Gronk pretty much.
Yeah, no,
they
I know.
Got rangy corners. They got safeties that can cover. They got the most athletic linebackers in the league. And they were doubling him on almost every play.
Well, but once again, last week he was being doubled and triple covered, and Brady was fitting into that little spot, but they didn't try it this week. They didn't even go there, which to me is like, in the playoffs, if it's, you know, third and five or fourth down or whatever, you know, Brady's going to take a harder look at that than just like, oh, okay, I'm going somewhere else. You know what I mean?
I could see that, yeah. Yeah, they didn't get the ball to Gronk very much, and outside of him offensively, not much happening.
No.
Philip Dorsett played fine.
Dorsett.
Michel, we saw play a little bit. He played okay. Nothing special.
He was all right. Yeah, nothing special there. Hogan finally showed up with a couple catches near the end of the game, but pretty much for three quarters, he was non-existent.
Yeah, he basically didn't. Those stats are pretty inflated. I know people sit there, he put up 16 fantasy points or whatever it is. It's like, yeah, but he didn't really show up in that game until it was out of hand. And some of the schemes to get him open, especially I'm thinking about that last touchdown where they threw the quick screen to the left to either James White or Cordarrelle Patterson. And in the very next play, they faked that. They threw Hogan in the seam and got him wide open. It's like, that was a Josh McDaniel touchdown. That wasn't Chris Hogan's making a great play.
Yeah, that was them setting that whole play up. Other places offensively, Rex Burkhead went 6 for 22. He played the first quarter and the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I was surprised to even see him out there after having a concussion on Wednesday, or at least being listed with.
And then for him to come in and disappear for almost, you know, most of the game after the first quarter, you're thinking, well, he got hurt again. But then they find, you know, then he comes back out, and it's like, well, were they trying to get Michel going? Was something going on? So that was a little weird.
Yeah, yeah, you could say that. Maybe it was heat-related. Could have just been on a snap count. They wanted to use him early.
Sure.
Don't know. Yeah, we're talking about all these weapons on offense, and it really leads into why all the people they signed last week. Who did they bring in? Kenyon Barner, Corey Coleman. There was some other guy, too.
The guy from the Bears.
Broncos? Yeah.
That was the Bears.
Doesn't matter.
Whatever. Doesn't matter.
And then this week, they didn't see much production from the skill positions. None of those guys played, really. And
let's hold off on the big piece of news.
Okay. Well, it's not like the people don't know that Josh Gordon is now on the Patriots.
Josh Gordon, yes. They got Josh.
Yeah. We'll come back to that later. We'll finish up talking about this game. But yeah, offensively, just, they needed people. Nobody was getting open. They were
no separation.
They looked tired out there. I wonder if that's one of the reasons they stayed away from Gronkowski. He was getting tired, or they didn't want him to get tired and put himself in a dangerous position.
That's what I think too, yeah.
The only other thing offensively that stuck out to me was right tackle. You know, LaAdrian Waddle is not the player Marcus Cannon is. It doesn't mean he's a bad depth option.
Yeah, but he's not a starting caliber.
He's not up to snuff with the rest of the line, unfortunately. Do you remember we were watching the game together, and we actually complimented Joe Tooney once in this game. I don't remember the play, but I remember being like, wow, am I complimenting Joe Tooney?
Yeah, I remember that. I don't remember the play either, but I remember commenting on it.
Yeah.
I mean, Dante, you know, Fowler, when he had the strip sack on Brady, that was Waddle. Now, Brady saw him, and you could say, well, maybe Brady could have moved out of the way or stepped up or held the ball, whatever. Mm-hmm. The fact is that was LaAdrian Waddle who, you know, just got beasted on that. Just real quick, some other offensive guys. Jacob Hollister finally showed up with an actual decent game, 3 for 35, which was nice, and they tried to get him the ball a couple times. Cordarrelle Patterson had a Cordarrelle Patterson game, which was just bad.
No, it's not. It's three screens and one carry. And that's what he is.
But it would just it didn't look good.
Oh.
That one where he was on the, what was it, third down, a big third down, and he just tripped over himself.
Oh, yeah, when he couldn't.
I don't know if that was because of the pass or anything, but that
the
was.
The pass hit him right in the chest, and he tripped over.
That was bad. Now, Tom Brady had a bad game, but statistically, he went 24 for 35, 234 yards and two TDs. Stats-wise, that doesn't look bad. That's pretty balling game. Decent.
Yeah, that
definitely decent.
That's fine. A lot of that's in garbage time, and you know, it really comes down to coming through in the clutch. And we went third down efficiency 4 of 12.
Yeah,
whereas Jacksonville was 10 of 14. Like that's you're not going to win a game doing that.
No, and a lot of those that Jacksonville, which will lead in the defense 10 of 14, I feel like at least two or three of those plays were because they were sent back on a penalty on something they converted, and then got pushed back, and then we stopped them. After they had lost.
Oh, you mean when they failed to convert? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, a couple times. I thought you were going to say a couple times, or like two, three times it was Blake Bortles running on third down.
Oh, that as well. Which leads us into the defense. This is a defense that gave up 31 to a Blake Bortles-led offense without their starting running back.
Yeah, 21 in the first half. Without a turnover, right? I don't think we turned the ball over.
Nope, didn't turn the ball over in the first half. I mean, Kenyon Cole went for 7 receptions, 116 yards, and a TD. I didn't even know who he was.
Nobody did.
The Westbrook went for 4 for 82 and a touchdown. That guy, Grant, the running back, is a real shifty motherfucker. He's a pretty good player.
He tears us up every time we see him. It's like we forget that he's fast.
It's crazy. And the other guys were just making plays when they needed to. I mean, Blake spread the ball around pretty well. He was making plays with his legs. He was on the money throwing. Now, I don't know.
Some of the guys were wide open. I'm not talking about Keelan Cole catching the ball right on the tip of the ball and then somehow avoiding the slap on the arm.
Yeah, which is arguably one of the best catches of the year.
It's the best play I've seen so far this season.
Definitely.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Dede Westbrook catching the ball over the middle when there's nobody there. Or Dede Westbrook catching the crosser in the fourth quarter and then just waltzing up the sideline. Daron Harmon not pinching, not doing shit. He's just standing there going, oh, I'm blocked. All right, I'm done for the play. That's fatigue.
The crossers in underneath routes killed us in this game. They were attacking our it's funny. They came in with a game plan that was very similar to what the Patriots usually do. They attacked our weaknesses. They went underneath and they attacked our running backs our linebackers in coverage, and then they attacked Rowe and whoever our second or third cornerback was, and they attacked them well.
Yeah.
Rowe was in good position a lot of times, but just couldn't make the play. McCourty came in after that, Jason McCourty, and really wasn't much of a step up.
Right.
And it just looked ugly. Linebacking was terrible.
Yeah, really, really bad. I heard after the game people were shitting on Hightower, and I didn't. When I watched the game, I didn't think it was that bad. And then I looked at some clips, and there were maybe like 6 select clips, and he was way off.
Yeah,
way off. Not physical at all. Missing terrible angles. Not being able to wrap up. Just and on critical plays on third downs in open space.
A lot of people have been saying that. A lot of people have been saying that he looks slow, which he did. I remember
he's always been slow. That was always the knock on him.
Right. I mean, he looks even slower. Even my brother mentioned it. He was like, holy shit, he looks slow. And there was one somewhere on the radio, talk show that the guys were talking, talk radio I was listening to, and they said, there was one play where he's backpedaling and then changes direction to go forward. And they were like, he didn't even look like he belonged on the field when he was just changing direction. I was like, holy shit.
Really? He looked like Tom Brady changing direction.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. I hope it's some kind of nagging injury, or maybe it was the heat.
Yeah.
But
he's still working his way back into game shape, too. It's not like he played a lot during preseason. Missed the final 10 games, was it, last year?
Yeah.
So it's taken a while for him to come back. I expect him to be back. But, yeah, the whole defense looks slow. We have big, fat defensive tackles, which is great, but our linebackers behind them are also, like, big, sluggish people. There's not a lot of speed in the front seven. You lose Trey Flowers and the pass rush goes away. There's no kind of pursuit up front.
Pass rush disappeared without him.
Pass rush completely disappeared. And I thought Claiborne played pretty well, but just there's no speed rush. There's just nobody to do it. Derek Rivers was a healthy scratch again. Dietrich Wise was okay until he went out of the game with a finger. But yeah, up front, there's no speed. On the back end, it's like Stephon Gilmore is our best player in the back end, hands down. And they were attacking him a lot. I think it's because they were leaving him in single coverage.
Yeah.
But
and he did all right. I mean,
I thought he did really well.
I thought he was fine. He caused a forced fumble. I mean, things weren't going their way either. Trey forced a fumble, great punch out, and it just rolls right to another player.
Right.
Of Jackson. Early. Like, Jesus Christ. So that was kind of the way that the game was going. Overall, the defense was terrible. Now, I don't know. It's a huge step back from the Texans game last week. Now, it comes down to, was it, they just had a bad game in general because of the heat, because of the scheme. They were underprepared. Or are these issues that are going to really keep coming up that, okay, the pass rush, will they get tired? Can the secondary not make these plays? Is the communication going to completely break down when someone like Pat Chung leaves the game?
Yeah, there's a lot of considerations there. I think it was a combination of things. And
I hope so.
Well, yeah, it always is. First and foremost, Jaguars are a good team.
Yeah, you got to give it to them. And this was their revenge game. They've been planning for this for a long time.
Yeah, did you see Nathaniel Hackett freaking out on the sideline? This is their offensive coordinator, the play caller. When he's on the side, that bald dude who's just screaming incoherently. Like, reminded me of, remember when Josh McDaniels was a coach for the Broncos?
And they beat
Belichick, and he was fist pumping his shoulder out of the socket. Yeah. Like that's what it looked like to me. And I'm like, oh, this is their Super Bowl like right now. So they're so focused on a game in September where I still feel like the Pats are evaluating what they have, and that's another piece of why so many different players got into the game.
100%. I mean, they're on the sports up Felger and Maz, who are pretty talk a lot of shit about the Patriots, but it's funny. Felger had a great point. He goes, looking at this offensively at least, it almost looked like they were trying, it was more important for them to try and get Sony Michel going as opposed to score points on offense. and he was like, when they're handing off a draw on third and six to their rookie running back in his first game, you start questioning, well, are they really trying to attack the weaknesses of the Jaguars defense if they can find any? Or are they, are they making a point to get this guy up to game speed and using this is almost a preseason game for him?
Yeah, it looked like some of that, especially in the fourth quarter after the strip sack.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like things collapsed a little bit. There was that series, I want to say in the third quarter, where we were driving the ball and it was, I think we did like four handoffs in a row. Rex Burkhead might have been in the game, so it could have been the fourth quarter. But, yeah, it was just handoff, 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 handoff. And we're like, we're down three scores with 15 minutes to go. You better step on it. And then right after that, they had the perfect answer to your questions as a fan. They do a play-action pass and pick up 25 yards easily. Philip Dorsett right in the middle of the field. It's like, oh, that's why they were running the ball.
Yeah.
To immediately set that up. And then later in the game, they do the quick screen and then the touchdown right off the quick screen previously. So it's... They're always thinking, they're setting things up. But from the things we learned in this game, Jaguars are good. At home, the heat was a big factor, I think.
Yep.
We still clearly do not have any good options to receive the ball that aren't named Gronk or James White. They're not there yet.
James White had a good game, too.
He had a really good game. Which was surprising against that linebacking core.
Definitely. You know, he played great. But then
you're talking I just want to say, you're talking about a receiving core that's about to add Josh Gordon and Julian Edelman in consecutive weeks.
Yeah.
Not consecutive, but those two guys in the next three.
Absolutely. And we'll get more to that in a sec here. But I just wanted to mention the one positive that I did take from the defense, which I think, you know, is going to could come up huge in the future, is that when the chips were down, when our offense wasn't firing and we were down and we needed plays, our defense did force two turnovers, I think on back-to-back, back-to-back drives.
Yeah, might have been.
We picked the ball off on a tip, and then we caused Stephon Gilmore punched the ball out in a good reception for a forced fumble. And on both, and so the defense was getting the ball back. They realized, holy shit, we fucked up. We need to get the offense the ball more, and they did. And then, but once the strip sack happened, they kind of were, you know, probably exhausted because of the heat and just, you know, surprised. Oh my God, what just happened? We didn't score at all. Get back on the field, and then they go for the 84-yard, whatever the hell it was, touchdown, and then that was kind of the nail in the coffin. But up to that point, they were fighting pretty good, and they got the ball for the offense twice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, we won the turnover battle.
Yeah, exactly. Those both happened before the strip sack, and that was really the final turning point.
Right. And that's pretty – well, not even that. I feel like that touchdown, that long touchdown was the final point because after that we weren't – you know, they were up by three now.
Up by three scores, yeah.
If they stopped them, that would have been great, but they were definitely too gassed at that point. So
yeah, that missed field goal at the beginning from Gostkowski really turned out to hurt. I know it was a long one. It was a 54-yarder, but if we were down 8 instead of 11 at that point,
yeah,
I feel like
that made a huge difference.
That would have been nice. But that's, you know, revisionist history. The yeah, I mean, the other thing I was thinking about was their left tackle. I said it so many times during the game. Their left tackle went out of the game in the second quarter. Cam Robinson went down with a season-ending injury, and they tossed in some goof in there who played great. Got to give it to him. He played great. But how do you not scheme something up to attack that dude?
Yeah.
At left tackle with Blake Bortles, got about the blindest blind side around.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
Yeah, that's when another time when Trey Flowers being out of the game hurts. Dude, yeah, Trey Flowers is still out of practice, concussion. So is Patty Chung. How many concussions has Patty Chung?
Probably 100.
If we're honest, too many to count. You can't count them on your fingers. And I think the NFL is actually investigating if he played with a concussion, which is like, have you watched the Patriots ever?
That dude is down. See him in the playoffs?
Every series he's down, and he looks shaken up.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
Scary.
So this game is in the books. The Patriots are now 1-1. Jacksonville is a team that we will most likely see again in the playoffs.
Maybe.
And if we do, I can tell you it's definitely going to be a much different game. But as of now,
home field will be a factor. Yeah, the biggest.
It might be. You know what, these teams that treat these early games like a playoff game.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they threw the whole kitchen sink at us. Like they schemed to everything. And it was almost like Bill was trying to be like, well, are they going to play us the same as they did in the playoffs last year? Do they have any other tricks? And they kind of have. So now at this point, it's like we've seen all their tricks. Like, I don't think they're going to come out in 8 weeks or 9 weeks and come up with different schemes. Or even when we play them again, they're going to have a whole another formula to us like Bill always does. You know, Bill always never shows his hand until the playoffs type of thing.
Yeah.
I don't think that for this team. And I feel like that after a win like that, after, you know, being so satisfied with a win like that so early on, that only bites you in the ass later because you're like, oh, you're happy, so happy you won this game. Well, you still have to go out and play 15 more weeks of football or whatever, whatever the fuck it is, 14 more weeks of football. So you're going to get bit.
Are you trying to tell me that Doug Marrone is not a mastermind?
I'm trying to tell you Doug Marrone is not a mastermind.
Wow.
They'll probably
lose. The hottest take around.
Several games. Because it, you know, keeping your emotions in check is a huge part of the NFL. And if they go, oh, we beat the Patriots, we're gonna beat the shit out of everybody. Not so fast. That's not how it works.
Wow, Lee Corso over there. Yeah, I know, right? Whoever the Jags are playing next weekend could be in for a letdown game. They're playing the Titans. Uh oh.
Yeah.
Titans. I can't believe they beat the Texans. Blows my. Yeah. The biggest problem, or you know, like the. The worst aspect of this game for the Pats is that the Jaguars are going to be near the top of the standings, and when you're jockeying for playoff seeding, the head-to-head matchup's nice to have on your side, and it won't.
That's, yeah. But So yeah,
that's where we're at. News. I know, big news. I want team speed. I want separation on offense. And Josh Gordon was on the market, and we were just kind of joking about it. Do you think maybe?
Yeah, I mean, maybe they
didn't even nibble, not even nibble at Dez Bryant.
And there were a lot of teams that I thought Josh Gordon would go to. Now, let's set the stage here.
Why wouldn't you want Josh Gordon? He's a 27-year-old true number one talent, true number one receiver. 6'3", wheels, 230, good hands, separation ability, all of it.
Well, before we even get to that, I mean, setting the stage at this receiver position, as we've been talking about, now this is two games where we haven't got a lot of separation. I've been hearing people talk about how do we let Brandon Cooks go and how do we let Danny Amendola go, and we've kind of mulled over that in the past. Cooks, you got a first-round pick. You can't blame him for that. And the Amendola situation, I've heard brought up multiple times from different people. You know, why didn't we keep him? $6 million, that's not that much money. That's not that much money. And it's like, do you realize what Julian Edelman's being paid?
Seven?
Julian, he's getting paid $3.9 this year.
Really?
He's on the books for $3.9.
So it was an extension that he got seven for?
Possibly. You can't pay a third or fourth receiver double what your number one is paying. You can't do it. Number two on the Amendola situation is, it's funny that everyone's bringing that up, because remember when we first signed him? You remember that?
Yeah.
It was 2013?
2013. Everyone
hated that deal. And then 2 years after the deal, everyone hated it even more because they're like, this guy isn't doing anything for us.
Yeah.
Plays three or four good playoff games since. Now he's worth $6 million.
Yeah, he had a slow start.
He had not even. The year we won the Super Bowl in 2016, he was huge help for us. He only had 200 receiving yards in the regular season.
Yeah, he's a playoff guy.
200.
Playoff third down Danny. He's a situational guy.
He's a situational guy, which is great, but, I mean, is that worth $6 million? I do wish that they went out and got somebody else during this. When they saw all this crap that they had, that they went out and got somebody that, you know, was a legit number two or three receiver, because you see guys out there like John Brown now on the Ravens who's playing well. We could have gotten Taylor Gabriel, who's on the Bears, playing well. We could have got, but they finally realized their mistake, and we went and got Josh Gordon.
And the deal looks pretty good. The deal is a fifth rounder this season for Josh Gordon and a seventh.
Right.
And making assumptions that the Browns will continue to suck, that'll be an early seventh rounder. And making the assumption that the Patriots will continue to be good, that'll be a late fifth. So not that big a difference in terms of draft selection. I think it's equivalent to about a sixth round pick. To roll the dice on a number one receiver on a minimum deal at 27 years old.
Yeah.
Pretty ridiculous. You cannot buy lower than that.
No.
There is no risk in this situation. No. If he pees hot or he skips meetings, or I don't know where they want to set the line for somebody that might have behavioral he doesn't want to come in and buy into the system immediately. I don't know where you set the discipline line. But you're basically sacrificing nothing. Very, yeah. Very small amount.
You cut them if you have to. The risk reward is, I mean, the risk is okay. You lose a fifth round pick. You got a seventh round. Whatever. The reward is you could field a guy who has, you know, could put up an easy 1,000-yard season and just completely blow the doors off the offense.
Yeah. A reminder to people. The 2013 season, Josh Gordon went off for 1,600 yards. He only played 14 games. He has the opportunity to play 14 games in a Patriots uniform.
Yeah.
I'm not setting the bar too high. You know what would be hilarious is if he comes in, he plays well for a few weeks, and then we Randy Moss him and we turn him around for a higher draft pick.
Yeah, that'd be insane.
Remember, because we got Randy for a fourth round pick, and then we sent him to the Vikings for a third round. After they use him up.
If he's rolling, I don't think they're going to get rid of him, and that's a big if. You know, he hasn't played since 2013. He's played like 10 games, I think they've been saying.
Yeah, something like that.
And he played last year, and it looks like the Browns are finally ready to get rid of him because of, obviously, all of his addict issues with drugs and alcohol and whatever else, and getting suspended and all this crap. He's been suspended for two full seasons. And then this year, the other couple days ago, he was supposed to play Sunday. Showed up Saturday morning with a hamstring injury that told him nothing about, because some kind of promotional video he was gonna, shooting the night before in the stadium. Didn't tell them. Tried to not say anything, or was complaining about it, and also looked off apparently. And they didn't know if he was relapsing or gonna relapse or whatever. and they decided that was enough. They've invested way too much time in this guy. Hugh Jackson didn't even seem to really like him at all. Based on his first week, he had a touchdown, and Hugh Jackson, when they asked him about, oh, Josh Gordon got a touchdown, and Hugh Jackson basically said, yeah, he wasn't even supposed to be on the field. It's like, that's an interesting take. So this guy is the type of guy that's got like a Randy Moss type athletic ability. 6'3", 220 pounds, runs God knows what, quick as hell. And, you know, we brought in, and you can't compare it too much to the Randy Moss situation, but everyone's been talking about all these suspensions. So I kind of went back and looked at Randy's history a little bit to see what happened with him and if he ever got suspended or whatever.
Yeah.
Never got suspended, but he definitely did some stuff that if he was not in a Paul Tagliabue commissioned NFL and he was in Mr. Penis's NFL here, that he probably would have been suspended.
Yeah, what, for mooning the crowd in Lambeau Field?
Maybe.
Fake mooning.
But
there was mooning.
One thing. No, I know. There was one thing he hit like a police officer with his car and knocked her over or whatever, and they also found weed in the car.
This is while he was in the NFL?
Done. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Done. He would have been done. The case was later dropped, but if that was like last year, yeah, see you later. Now, I love Randy Moss, and I have nothing to say bad about him. And it's a marijuana I don't give a shit about, so I wouldn't want him to get suspended. He's great. Definitely had better... not nearly as many issues as Josh Gordon does. Josh Gordon has severe addictive personality issues with drugs and alcohol. But on the flip side of that, I've heard some pretty promising things from the Browns organization and Browns writers that basically they say, we brought in Kenny Britt and we brought in Coleman, and they were basically saying that those two guys were way worse in the locker room, were very, self-absorbed people, not team players and all this. And they were saying, Josh Gordon's not that guy. Josh Gordon's a very articulate, very, buys into the program and all that stuff. The only issue with Josh is he has addictive personality, which means he's lying about if he's addicted to certain substances.
Sure.
And so he'd say, I'm not addicted to that. And then 2 years later, oh, yeah, I was addicted to that the whole time. I've been doing it the whole fucking time. And everyone's like, well, what the fuck?
I thought it was just marijuana and alcohol for Josh.
No, there was a GQ article about him, and I didn't read the whole thing, but he was basically saying he was drinking and smoking before games.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
And then, right, but I think there was some pills going on, some pill stuff.
Fair enough.
I believe.
Everything I've heard is that he's not a bad guy. He's not. He's an intelligent guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's, as you said, just those addictive concerns. Whereas somebody like Corey Coleman has a potential to be... I always compared Corey Coleman to DeSean Jackson and somebody that can divide people.
Mm.
He's like got that strong personality that can pull a cohesive unit apart. And Josh Gordon just seems like go with the flow guy.
Yeah. And I mean, that to me is the most promising aspect of that this may work, is because he has the personality where he's willing to listen and try and buy in. So, if anyone's going to be able to get this guy to be sober for 6 months, it might be, hey, guess what? You've got another chance. You're playing for Tom. You're getting passes thrown to you by the greatest quarterback of all time, under the greatest head coach of all time. And if you do this all right, you might win a fucking Super Bowl out of it. And next year you'll get paid through the ass.
Yeah. It's not about the Super Bowl for him as much as the lottery at the end of it.
Ridiculous. So it's like, if you can keep your shit together for 6 months, you fucking hit the lottery, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, unfortunately
for him, it's not going to be about 6 months, because he's in like the double secret probation drug program for the NFL. So he could get drug tested 3 times a day. They'll do whatever they want.
Right.
And any hint of a diluted sample or whatever it is, oh, you're overhydrated this morning. What's up? He's like, it's game day.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, no, that's it. You're suspended. I don't know how they do that. I don't know how you can say your sample is diluted. And he's like, I'm an athlete. I'm trying to hydrate. You just...
Yeah.
I don't get how they can do that. Spin down the pee. I don't figure it out. Do some science.
Separate the water. Yeah. I have no idea.
But you're absolutely right. He's on, I believe he's still on a 1 year contract, or he's on the last year of his contract.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be a short term rental, but especially for the track record that the Patriots had for rehabilitating players' reputations around the league, not necessarily
absolutely.
It's not a rehab. But the way that they can turn a player's
keeping
reputation
him in check.
Around.
Yeah,
he's a restricted free agent after this.
Yeah, so we still have a tender for him.
Whoa, even better.
Yeah, I mean, he's ours.
So you could tender him with, like, the top tender. What is it, like $5 million for the first-round tender? And then if somebody signs him, you get a first-round pick? And
yeah.
Wow. Wow. We could turn a sixth-round pick into a first-round pick plus a season of a number one receiver. See, these are the deals I love.
But it's all – it depends on if it works out. I mean, he could – there's a chance he gets cut next week.
Right, like Cassius Marsh. Like, that dude didn't last very long. He cost us a fifth or a sixth-round pick. And so you roll the dice every so often. How many sixth-round picks are making this team right?
Exactly.
Like, none. I see them all scattered all over the league. There's that tight end Lee Smith for the Raiders. John Jalapio is starting at guard for the Ravens. There's these sixth-round picks that we had taken that just didn't make the squad. And it doesn't mean they're terrible players. It just means they don't fit.
Right.
There's only so much talent you could fit.
Well, and it's funny you keep saying a sixth round pick. Apparently they wanted to give a sixth round pick, but they didn't have one to give. So they did give a fifth and work a seventh back into it.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
Yeah, because they traded the sixth for Batamosi, who I still think we should have kept. God damn it, I like that guy.
Well, yeah, I did too. It's too bad we got rid of him.
So Josh Gordon's in the fold. Now the receiver depth chart, at least until Edelman comes back, it's got Hogan, Philip Dorsett, Cordarrelle Patterson, Josh Gordon, Corey Coleman, tons of talent.
Loads pretty good.
Of talent. Cordarrelle Patterson, first round pick.
Coleman
Philip Dorsett
was released and now on the practice squad.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so he got cut so Gordon would have space.
And we released Kenyon Drake.
Kenyon Barner.
Barner, I'm sorry.
They
and got
would
back.
Not have released Kenyon Drake.
No, you're right. Yeah, he's a good player. And we got back a good old Cyrus Jones.
Cyrus Jones. So Kenyon Barner didn't even get a chance to return a punt.
Nope, they didn't. They didn't trust him.
Didn't even get to suit up. Why not? That dude's been returning punts his whole life.
No idea.
Yeah, well, Cyrus Jones, yeah, he's real trustworthy with the ball coming down.
So, yeah, huge boom or bust value, regardless of the fact that if he can play and suit up, they have to respect him. So if you put him on the field just as a decoy, he's going to open things up underneath for Edelman once he's back. He's going to open things up over the middle and in the seam for our good old friend Rob Gronkowski. I mean, he opens up the whole field because now you have to respect him on the outside, which we haven't had since Randy Moss.
Yeah, exactly. And people might point out, oh, Philip Dorsett's even faster than Josh Gordon. Doesn't he already stretch the field? And it's like, well, no, because Philip Dorsett can't just beat a guy. If you throw a jump ball up down the sideline in close coverage, Philip Dorsett's got to have at least a step on that guy to bring it in.
Yeah.
Whereas Josh Gordon could be hip-to-hip with the defender and take that ball away, as you saw with his only catch so far this year. Went for a touchdown in between double coverage, just took it out of a guy's face mask.
Exactly. So
it's a different skill set.
It's just, yeah, I mean, he's basically like a Julio Jones.
Yeah, he's got the same athleticism as Julio Jones. Now, I would certainly wouldn't want to downplay anything that Julio has been able to accomplish.
Right.
That dude is an artist on the field. That catch in the Super Bowl, still, I don't get it still.
Yeah. So if Josh put the time in, was as committed as Julio, he would have had the same portfolio there.
Oh, he's keeping the metaphor alive. What were the other games this weekend that stuck out? We were watching the Thursday night game. Baltimore went down big.
Big time.
Big time.
Big time. Yeah. The Steelers lost. Yeah.
They'll never actually get a penalty.
I don't know. He just loves them. He loves the Ravens. He loves them. Who else? I mean, the Steelers lost to the Chiefs, and Pat Mahomes threw for 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, piss-poor defenses all around.
Yeah, a lot of bad defense. Minnesota, a lot of bad kicking. Minnesota fucking kicker lost the game terribly.
Twice. Two and they missed field goals in overtime.
And they asked Zimmer, they're like, so what was the reason behind cutting the kicker? And he's like, did you see the game? Did you see the game? And the guy was like, yeah, I saw the game. He goes, well, then you know why we cut it. It was so good.
Oh, that's great.
Zimmer was so mad. Like, are you kidding me?
Are you kidding?
Did you see what happened? So that's a huge game that they tied. So that's a second tie in 2 weeks, which I don't remember happening that often. And then another kicker. The Browns were supposed to win the game. Should have won the game against the Saints, and they lost because of missed kicks. And they
cut
their kicker.
Yeah,
it's funny. I mean, someone was talking about this the other day. I might have been on the sports app, and they were basically saying, like, you know, who would have thought that, you know, the carousel of kickers the last couple of years, like all the people getting cut and picked up and cut and picked up has been ridiculous, like the amount of transactions. And it's like, who would have thought moving the fucking extra point back a couple, like what, a 10 or 20 yards, whatever it was.
Yeah, 10 yards.
Would just screw with all the kickers.
Yeah.
Like they've all been not nearly as good. And like that's an easy field goal.
Yeah.
They hit that all the fucking time.
But they're not getting, nobody's getting cut for missing extra points. You're talking about missed field goals.
Well, that's the guy why getting cut. The guy in Minnesota missed extra points as well as field goals.
Okay, but he missed two game-winning field goals. That's why he right? got cut.
Yeah, but if he also, to add insult to injury, if he didn't miss the extra points, they would have won because it wouldn't have been a tie.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I see that. Who would have thunk it that the Browns should be 2-0? I mean, yeah, you can totally believe that they would screw it up and get to 0-2. But they, against two of the best not, teams in the league,
they are
two
not
division 0-2. Winners.
They're 0-1-1.
You're right. But they should be 2-0 against two of the best teams in the league, at least what we thought were two of the best teams before the season.
Yeah, you got the Bengals at 2-0. I don't remember who they beat this week. That was
the Ravens.
That's right, the Ravens. Yeah. The Jets came back down to earth finally, and Sam Darnold, and they lost.
Is he not the savior anymore? I could have sworn he was the Messiah.
I'm sure he's still the Messiah, but we'll see. The Giants lost to Dallas in a pretty ugly game, and it looks like Chargers took a game, which was nice, and then L.A. is really kind of running away with things.
Yeah, L.A. looks good, but who have they played? They played the Raiders and the Cardinals. The Cardinals are attempting to be they're the Bills of the NFC. They're trying to be the worst team in the conference.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
Doing a good job of it.
Philly. Seattle. Philly up.
Philly loses to Tampa. Tampa continues
Tampa's
to be
2-0.
Hot. Continues to be hot. I knew this was going to happen. I should have put money on this. Philly didn't look that good. I was not a believer in what they put on the field against the Falcons week one.
Yeah.
And then to come around to week two against a team that just put up, what they put up, like 48 points against the Saints? I was like, I don't see it. The players that the Eagles are missing, particularly Wentz. Wentz is coming back this week. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'd be like,
cleared.
Can you prove to me that Jason Peters can play a full game and then I'll come back? That's what I would say if I were Carson.
Absolutely. Seattle's a big surprise to me that they just suck.
They suck on the road, man.
Their offensive line is still non-existent.
Yeah, but they've been decent with shitty O-lines. They've always had a shitty O-line, at least for the last 4 years.
Probably. Yeah, they've always had a shitty O-line, but now it's like, what have you guys been drafting? Because your defense sucks.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Outside a receiver, they have no talent.
Is Cliff Averill's out, right? He had that.
I think
scary,
he retired.
Yeah, he had that scary injury. So Cliff Averill's gone. Michael Bennett got traded. Richard Sherman's gone. Camp Chancellor's out. That's a different defense.
It's gone.
It's over. Yeah, it really is
Earl
over.
Earl Thomas is the only one, and he's looking for a way out any way he can.
Bobby Wagner's a Hall of
Famer. Bobby Wagner and what's their other
KJ
linebacker?
Wright. KJ Wright. KJ Wright's their Hightower.
Yeah.
The thing that defense, it was always about pressure with the four down linemen. It was always about that. And
yeah, they just don't have
that. They have Frank Clark. Who do they have on that D line now? It's like,
I don't even know.
It's not real. So that team is, by virtue of having Russell Wilson alone, will get them to like 6 wins. But I don't know if they're getting beyond.
Yeah. It's just so funny that like everyone shits on the Patriots for this, that, and the other thing. Oh my God, they're not surrounding Brady with talent. It's like, here's a team that has a guy who's going to be great for probably another decade, barring any injury. And they have taken all the talent in their team and just shut it down.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're shutting it down. Where, you know, we have a very talented top 10 quarterback in the league right now. And we're going to make sure that he has nothing around him.
Offensively, defensively, it's just gutted.
It's gutted. So another team that went 0-2 was the Detroit Lions.
Oh, yeah. That's who the Pats are going to be facing off against next weekend. Sunday Night Football.
Who look really bad.
So bad. They looked incredibly bad against the Jets. And then I didn't see that much of the San Fran game. But they were unable to pull it out in that one.
They apparently looked pretty bad. Jimmy G threw another pick, what was going to be almost another pick six that game, but then they called it back on penalty, unfortunately. But you got right now, you have they're fourth in the NFC North, obviously. You got our old friend Matty P there. You got Bob, what's his name, in the front office, who's an ex-Patriots scout.
Bob Quinn.
Bob Quinn, so they got some familiarity. Right now, they are giving up 39 points a game, which is second to last in the league, for 347.5 yards, which is middle grade, only 168 passing yards, but that's because they're dead last in giving up rushing yards at 179.5 a game.
Yeah, what was it? Matt Breida went for like 140 last week.
Yeah, Mr. Nobody, and then puts up 140. So this is definitely a game for our offense to get back on track with a little bit, get the running backs in there a little bit.
Yeah,
get Sony Michel going.
I'm curious who's got the coaching advantage, because Patricia came from Belichick's tree. He was the defensive coordinator here for 6 years, maybe something like that. Ever since Dean Pease left, a while ago,
a long time ago,
and almost for the equal stretch of time. Not quite as long. Josh McDaniels has been the offensive coordinator. So they've been calling plays against each other in practice every day for half a decade.
That's a good point.
And now, so I'm like, who has the advantage? Because Patricia's seen all these plays. But now McDaniels is seeing Patricia call plays for a different group of players. I just have a hard time figuring out who's got the edge. But one side's got Tom Brady and the other side has no one.
And he's lost his locker room apparently already.
Is that overblown? What you keep hearing?
You know what? They said the same thing about Josh McDaniels and a few other coaches that left Belichick. And you know, the more I think about it, these guys learn from Belichick, and the way Belichick coaches, you know, he's got a difficult way to him. Like he always says, it's tough to go over there and coach by him, because he puts a lot of pressure on you and asks a lot of you. But guys do it because of the success.
Yeah.
You know, they respect it. Okay, well, this guy, I'm coming in here, and we're going to win. We're going to do all this in there. We're going to win. And then you hear Matt Patricia goes to Detroit and works them like dogs and works them really hard, and you guys start complaining about it. Now, if they won, they'd say, well, at least we're starting to win. This guy might be onto something. But now they're 0-2.
Right.
And we've heard these questions start arising after week one that he already lost the locker room and they were all pissed off at him. And then they lose again. Now they have to play the fucking Patriots off of a loss. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if they go down early, the team's probably not going to do too much to fight back.
Yeah, maybe not.
You know?
They have a good amount of new faces on the team as well. Offense is pretty standard. I think that was probably part of the hiring process. We want to keep this offense intact. Can we get a head coach in here that can work around what Jim Bob Cooter has set up on offense? Cooter. I know. I'll say that name all day every day.
I can't get over it. Yeah. So offensively, what were we going to say?
I was going to talk about the new faces on defense.
Defense.
Yeah, yeah. There's some people that you'd recognize. Darius Slay, Quandre Diggs, Glover Quinn. Those are guys that have been there for a while. Ezekiel Ansa, who they just brought back. But how about Sylvester Williams coming over from Denver? Ricky Jean-Francois. Remember that dude?
Oh, yeah.
And they have middle linebacker Jared Davis in his second season out of Florida. I loved the dude going into
We've also got Marquise Flowers.
And Tavon Wilson.
Yep.
Uh-huh. A couple familiar faces. Nothing special on that defense. There's a reason they're averaging 40 points a game against. And and any Patriots fan can attest, Matt Patricia may or may not be a very good coach, but he can put out some crappy defenses.
Yeah.
Exhibit A, the last two Super Bowls. Now, he'll turn it up when he needs to in crucial situations, but as you mentioned, maybe the team's not ready to do that for him.
Was it the last two Super Bowls? No, the last Super Bowl.
They gave up 28 points in like 28 minutes against the Falcons.
That's true, and then they clamped up, but you're right. Yeah. No, I mean, and it's if we had a better game in Jacksonville, I would have been like, well, Matty P was the issue the whole time, but clearly not.
Offensively, yeah, so they got talent.
Offensively, they got some talent. They're averaging 22 points a game, which is ranked 19th in the league. 383 yards, which is pretty good. 314 passing yards a game, which is ranked 6th in the league. Very good there, but only 68.5 rushing yards, which is 30th.
Yeah, but they've been playing from behind the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. I mean, they got Matt Stafford, who we all know, but he's having an off to a rocky start with 4 TDs and 4 interceptions. 61.6 passing completion percentage, which is okay. Kerryon Johnson's not bad. He's averaging 4.6 yards a rush. He's got 13 for 60 yards so far. Good old LeGarrette Blount's there, who got ejected from the game last week, so we'll see if he plays.
Of course he did. Yeah, they got talent all over the place. That Kenny Golladay kid looks good.
Yeah.
Theo Riddick is sneaky really good. He's very similar to James White.
Yep, he's been around for a while. They got Golden Tate, who's a solid pain in the ass for all defenses. And then Marvin Jones is a solid player. So, solid talent.
Yeah, they have, like, two number two receivers. They got power back, a couple good scat backs, actually two good power backs. And their line's fine. Their line's really good, actually. TJ Lang, Taylor Decker, Rick Wagner, they got talent up front, and Stafford mm-hmm. can sling it. So they have the ability to put up points in a way that the Jaguars were able to do but probably shouldn't have been able to do. Mm-hmm. And this game will be in the dome. Wait, is this a home game for the Pats? This is a home, right?
I didn't think it was.
Let me get it up.
Nope, it's in Detroit.
It's in Detroit. So it'll be perfect conditions for throwing the ball. It doesn't look like Trey Flowers and Patrick Chung are going to be able to play, which doesn't bode well for our pass defense.
No, hopefully we'll see some Derek Rivers. Maybe he'll be welcomed into the club.
Probably. We're going to need bodies up front, so he'll probably be activated. Just whether or not we're going to have guys that can make a difference. I think that the Lions will most definitely put up points, without a doubt. And plus, the defensive coordinator for the Pats, they don't have a defensive coordinator, but the play caller, Brian Flores, grew up completely under the tutelage of Matt Patricia in terms of his coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows everything he taught him.
True.
So he's going to be able to be a really good reference for Jim Bob Cooter in the offense. So, you know, it's a tough situation to be in for the Pats, but you're going against one of the teams that's looked the worst in the league so far. And I cannot believe that the Lions defense will rise to the occasion.
No.
When the Patriots are coming off a loss.
Yeah, Brady's going to be fired up. We have enough talent without Josh Gordon to beat this defense pretty handily, I think. And if Josh Gordon can bring anything to the table, I think it's going to be a blowout, man. I don't really give them much credit of anything. I think their offense is going to still sputter. Yeah. It'll be a good game for our defense to actually, you know, get a little momentum.
I think in the end, it'll be 37-27, but it'll be a big, thick gap for most of the...
Nah, I'm going 34-10.
Oh, okay.
Blowout.
You have that much confidence in our defense.
No, I just think I just have that little confidence in this team getting their asses together.
Fair enough.
Being the Detroit Lions. They look bad, man. Yeah. They just look bad.
It should be noted that Josh Gordon was limited in practice today with a hamstring injury. The hamstring injury that they brought him to the Pats, oddly enough. We should be very grateful for that. And Darius Slay, the best defensive back for the Lions, is out of practice with concussion. So could be a few key players missing with concussions.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, some of the other big games this weekend, Saints are playing the Falcons. That is always a classic. Always.
Yeah.
So I really hope that one's going to live up to it.
New York Jets are playing Cleveland in Cleveland. Will Cleveland take a fucking win? I sure hope
this
so.
This is on Thursday night, yeah. You wouldn't think that that's an interesting game, but I would love to watch that.
You know, the Browns and Jets are actually kind of exciting this year because they're like, they've got some talent. It's just trying to figure out if they can put it together, and it's fun to watch them trying to figure it out, putting it together.
Exactly. You'd be like, ooh, Quincy Enunwa is going to make a player. What's Jamal Adams going to do? Is Baker Mayfield going to get on the field?
Yeah.
Miles Garrett is a certified stud, can take over a game.
What else we got? Bengals at Carolina. I feel like that's a pretty good game. No?
I don't care.
Bengals are 2-0.
I don't care at all about
that. Yeah, well, a lot of the 1 o'clock games are kind of like that. Denver, Baltimore, not so much. New York Giants versus Houston is ugly. Mm-hmm. Tennessee, Jacksonville, what you mentioned earlier, is pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know what's up. I guess Mariota played last week, even though he wasn't entirely expected to play, but then he's still saying, like, I don't know if I'll play this week. It's like, what? I don't know what's going on with the Titans. The Jaguars are coming off their biggest win of the year, even if they go undefeated from now on.
Franchise.
But, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen in that game. It all depends on who's going to be out there for the Titans after they lost a ton of people.
Yeah, and just a fun fact, you hear that Malcolm is the worst statistical quarterback in the league right now?
By Pro Football Focus?
Boom.
Or by most yards given up?
I think both. Here, let me take a little.
That'd be incredible.
Let me take a little look here.
Hard to imagine he would be the worst Pro Football Focus.
Scott Barrett at Pro Football Focus. Per Barrett's research, who is the guy at Pro Football Focus, Butler has been targeted 17 times a season while allowing a league-high 257 yards and a league-worst 3 touchdowns in coverage.
Yeah, so it's stats, not his PFF rate.
Well, that's the guy from PFF.
So most yards and most touchdowns. Yeah, but they give the players a grade, and I was going to say that it'd be hard to believe that he would have the worst grade after he had a pick six.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah, I guess they're attacking him. Okay, how about that?
People don't have them, yeah.
Broncos and Ravens, let's hope they both lose.
Yeah, you got San Fran at Kansas City. Let's hope Kansas loses.
Suppose the Chargers-Rams could be a really, really...
Yes, that's a 4 o'clock game.
Right. The battle of L.A. right there. Game. Chargers got online against the Bills last week. Sometimes you need a tune-up game. What was that movie, The Longest Yard? Sometimes you got to play Alcorn State, beat the living shit out of them, get your confidence
Appalachian.
Up. Whatever.
So every time I see Appalachian State on TV, I think of that.
That's what you think of.
Beat the living shit out of them.
So the Chargers are back, and the Rams have looked unstoppable so far.
So we'll see what happens there, yeah. Green Bay at Washington, it's not bad.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know what to think about Washington right now. Just like how were they even close? Well, how did the Colts beat the Redskins in Washington?
No, it was in Indianapolis. I think.
It was the Colts. Colts aren't that good. I think the Redskins aren't good either.
I don't think anyone's really that good, to be honest, right now.
Yeah,
there's really not that many good teams. I mean, who are you gonna say? Tampa Bay?
No, I'm gonna say the Rams. The Rams are the only certified good team.
That's about it. Like you even said, who have they even played?
Yeah, the Broncos are 2-0. It's like I don't believe it at all in the Broncos.
No. What else? You got Dallas at Seattle, which 2 years ago would have been the game of the week.
Yeah, now nobody cares.
A shit. And then you got Pittsburgh at Tampa on Monday night, which I would have originally said was terrible, but now it looks like a great fucking game.
That game is gonna be like 40-45.
I know. Start all your fantasy players on both rosters.
Yeah, exactly. Take the over. Get in on that.
Speaking of your favorite subject, have you heard all the Pittsburgh drama this week?
What's happening?
No, you haven't heard this?
I heard. Oh. No, I haven't heard anything since they were bad-mouthing Le'Veon Bell.
Oh, boy. You're in for a treat. So Antonio Brown apparently was very disgruntled after the game Sunday and left abruptly. Didn't show up to practice on Monday without an excuse. Apparently the team didn't know it, and they said he was supposed to be there. Meanwhile, one of the sports writers in Pittsburgh, I believe, made a comment on Twitter saying something like, well, Antonio Brown is lucky as shit that he has a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, and he was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers, because Ben Roethlisberger, without him, he wouldn't have the same production, and he's the one that got him paid. So he can thank Ben Roethlisberger, which Antonio Brown replied to, okay, why don't you trade me and see? And that was when he was supposed to be at the team's facility.
Oh, my
goodness. At like 10:30. So that happened, and everyone's going, holy shit, what's going on? Are they going to trade him? So now the two superstars in Pittsburgh are both disgruntled, and they can't, you know, shit's going down for both of them. Whether, you know, everyone's saying, oh, it's going to blow over, AB's good for one of these a year, which he might be. But on the flip side of things, it's like, well, if they're two star players, can't get their
shit. For that culture is terrible.
It's terrible. It's
they are not happy. That is not a happy group. Antonio, trade me. Get the heck out of here.
Trade me and see. Let's find out or something. Basically,
that guy's got a point. If he said it the way you said it, which is that he wouldn't be the same player, he wouldn't have gotten paid as much, he wouldn't have produced as much, and it's totally true. You mentioned before, Randy Moss. Look what happened with Randy Moss when he had Dante Culpepper. Awesome. Randall Cunningham, awesome. Went to Oakland and had Andrew Walter throwing him footballs. Not quite as good. Went to New England, incredible with Tom Brady.
Broke records.
It's a team sport. You do better when you play with better people. So it's like, yeah, your production's going to be up. And yes, the Steelers have a history of developing receivers way better than they probably would have elsewhere. Note that the Patriots don't develop receivers very well.
Horrible. They were going back over the list of like we've drafted since like 2009. And then you can even go back to like 2002. And it's like but the two guys we've hit on is Deion Branch.
Julian Edelman.
And that's...
Yeah, everyone else was a swing and a big ol' miss.
Yeah, sucked.
Brandon Tate, Taylor Price, Chad Jackson. I even put him out of my brain.
But what's the guy? Aaron Dobson. Let's go on and on.
I already forgot the dude's name from TCU that was in that same draft, the 2013 draft. Boyce. Josh Boyce. All right.
But anyway, so we gave our predictions.
I know. It's going to be a good weekend of football. Let's get the team back on track. Hope to at least have a 500 record at the end of September. That's what you need. At least 500.
That'd be nice. Yep.
All right. Thank you, people, for listening. We'll be back next week to break down the week three games and then look ahead to week four. And enjoy your football Sunday.
Absolutely.
See y'all.
Adios.